Welcome to another episode of Just Press Start here at JustPressStart.net. I am honored to have with me Cliff Harris from Positech Games, maker of Gratuitous Tank Battles, the spiritual successor, I guess, to Gratuitous Space Battles. Cliff, welcome to the program, and let's get right into it.
Okay, yeah, it's good to be back.
So we were discussing a little. We talked about the background of the game. That you said that your designs kind of always change when you create a game, and you work on the designs as you're working on the game. So tell me about how Gratuitous Tank Battles initially appeared in your head when you first decided you wanted to do the update, and then how it evolved into what we have now.
Well, initially it was kind of just doing the logical thing, which is to take Gratuitous Space Battles and try and set it somewhere else. And I quite like the idea of a sort of land-based version of that. So I started work on that. But about that time, I was playing Plants vs. Zombies quite a bit, which I got quite addicted to. And I thought it was a really good game and really sort of well designed, and the mechanic was kind of like simple but also strategic, and I loved everything about it. But what I didn't like was that, it was just cartoon pot plants and they weren't particularly kind of my sort of thing. I thought, big tanks with lasers or something would be better, if only someone did that. So I kind of took what I liked about that, which is basically tower defense, and sort of blended it with everything that I would like to see in a tower defense game, which kind of changed the whole design of it. So it's a mishmash of a lot of different ideas and genres all stuck together, but based around the idea of tower defense, I guess.
So you've taken the idea of tower defense, as you say, but you've also added an attack component to it as well. So as we were discussing before, this is a very difficult game to describe, because you have the defensive capabilities, like as you normally do, you're putting down turrets and putting down various defenses, but you can also play those same maps as the attacker in something almost like Anomaly Warzone Earth, where you're you're actually choosing the path and trying to slam through those same defenses. And if I recall correctly, you also said that you can play against yourself. So talk a little bit about this kind of genre-defying nature.
Yeah, it's a little bit strange, but basically, I started coding a normal tower defense game and thought about all the things that I didn't like about them. I don't like the predictability of a tower defense game, where you just know what's coming once you've played that map before. So there's just, a script. And you can play like that. There are scripts in the game if you want to play scripted. But one of the things I thought is because I'm allowing you to play as attacker and as defender on the same map, that it would be cool if you could just save out your attack as a script and then play back against it as defender. So if you beat a certain mission and think, yes, I've done it and I've got the ultimate attacking force that's wonderful, and you save that out and think, excellent, you can then like turn the tables and play against that and kind of try and beat yourself. And also there's this online challenge system in place, so you can also upload that and say, this is me attacking on sort of mission 4, and you see if you can defend against that. And the more I sort of went down that kind of rabbit hole of trying to just do crazy things, because this is kind of a successor to Gratuitous Space Battles, which had a lot of unit design, then it became quite easy to have all of the units designed by the player and also have that built into the challenge stuff. This is where it gets really complicated and a nightmare to explain to people. but essentially, you can design your own kind of tanks or turrets or whatever. You can play the game, for example, as the attacker. You can then upload that as a challenge, saying, these are the units I designed. This is where and when I placed them. And you now get to play tower defense against my saved out attack. And there's also a map editor, so theoretically you could be playing a game against your friend's designed tanks deployed by him in his attack pattern that he likes on a map he designed, and vice versa. You can sort of change about anything you want. You can then take his map, edit it, send it back to him with your attack. There's so many permutations, it's incredibly difficult to explain all the different options, but they all make sense when you sit down and play.
And something else we started to discuss, and that our first recording started acting up, so I apologize for that again. We were talking about the resource management, how it's kind of different than other tower defense. I mean, tower defense normally have resources. Again, you bring up Plants versus Zombies, you click on the sun, and that allows you to build more units. But you have something that's a little bit different, especially when it comes to the attacking. So why don't you describe that? Because it's a really intriguing way, and it kept the gameplay, I felt, far more frantic than a tower defense or even a tower attack normally winds up being.
Yeah, I mean, what I was trying to defeat, as it were, is the problem you get in a lot of games where there's like a tank rush of like one unit that is the best design. And I don't like it when a game allows you to just spam and for that to work. So I wanted to find a way that would kind of encourage the player to use everything that was available and for it to look like a real battle. That's what I want. I want it to look like a real battle, but you're also playing to win. So you don't have to make any kind of compromises on that. So there's this system where, for example, if you take, say, heavy tanks, you've only got, for example, four, and you can put down those four. And you will have an infinite supply of those tanks. They will all show up. But once your stock of four has gone down, you have to wait for them to arrive at the battlefield. So you've kind of got a guy in stores that's like, okay, you're out of heavy tanks. We're sending more gradually to you. But the trick to it is that the supplies you have to spend to get units, they go up faster than the supply of any one type of unit. So you can't just sit there and wait for your favorite unit to become available again, as you're just wasting points. So you're encouraged to kind of branch out and put down some infantry here and some tanks there and some mechs somewhere else, because you're kind of working around what's available as well as the resources that you've got.
And it also felt more quote-unquote realistic, if you can have walking, especially for the attack, because of the idea that it is a stretched-out supply line, that you're not just gaining the ability to just, I can suddenly bring in more reinforcements. You have a limited amount, but you don't know what that amount is. I really like that feeling that you have an idea of about what you'll be able to accomplish, but...
Yeah, I mean, that also kind of ties into the way the AI works, because... the AI isn't scripted. There are scripts if you want them, but it will adapt. So, for example, even if you take away that mechanic of supplies that I've put in to stop you spamming, you know, if there's some way for you to just put down 40 squads of infantry, which is, you know, like 1,000 infantry, then the AI won't care, because it'll just build loads and loads of machine guns and just mow them down. So you have to keep changing. You have to keep thinking, right, I'm going to attack with some infantry, and now there'll be some tanks here.
So let me ask you, how do you, because people are not used to this necessarily as a play style, what do you recommend for an attack strategy? Do you recommend attacking, focusing on the first defenses you see, or trying to find something to get to the end game, to the as many victory points? How do you recommend a new player should proceed?
It is very different from a normal game. The thing you have to concentrate on is, in order to win the map as attacker, you have to get a certain value of supplies off the map through the exits. And really, shooting at the enemy is a completely secondary concern. I think people get a little bit too fixated that here's turrets and infantry, and I need to kind of put whatever is out there in order to take them out. But really, you're not trying to do that. You're just trying to get your supply trucks and your other kind of high scoring units off the map. So what you need to do is concentrate on putting down stuff that's actually going to score points, and only really putting down really offensive units if you need to take out specific enemy turrets. I mean, one of the mechanics in the game is that infantry are worth quite a lot. So if you can get infantry off the map, you score quite a few points. Now, if you just try and spam infantry to the extent that the game will let you, you'll find loads of like flamethrower turrets and machine gun turrets, and you need to put down mechs and tanks to take them out to enable the infantry to get off the map. But you don't really have to worry about the enemy shooting at your stuff and blowing it up, and unless it's actually stuff that was going to be worth points. And that's, I guess, slightly different. It's not really deathmatch. It's more like capture the flag, in terms of, you know, there's an objective, and don't get hung up on just scoring hits on the enemy.
Right. I said it does take some getting used to because you're starting those units out on those three blocks at the beginning and trying to figure out exactly what the best way to go about that. It's a very intriguing puzzle. I have to give you credit for that.
And it's quite a long way to get to the exit sometimes. So you have to kind of
Yes.
think, these guys are fine here because they've got shields and the enemy have only got lasers. But by the time it gets halfway across, they're going to get slammed by missiles. And it is hopefully pretty tactical. And, you can pause the game and slow it right down and think about it.
So let's talk about the World War One setting, or the World War One like setting for gratuitous tank battle, because obviously, mechs and so forth, but and lasers. But talk about the idea that of a history where the Great War never ended.
Well, I've always thought that there should be games about World War One. I'm a bit of a sort of war history geek, which it probably sounds unlikely because I've made a game where you have tanks with lasers on and mechs and ridiculous things that obviously are completely impractical anyway. But I've always thought that World War One was kind of a great setting. But the problem is, it doesn't have the kind of weapons that are kind of cool and make for sort of interesting gameplay choices and stuff like that. And at the same time, I've always thought that tower defense was a ridiculous idea because, why go down that road? There's all these turrets, and you
Right.
pick the most windy road to go from like your base to the enemy, whatever. And still, you keep sending people to their death along this road where it's suicide. But in a sense, that kind of sums up the Battle of the Somme and World War One. So
Absolutely.
it kind of works, to the extent that that you've got ridiculously insane, kind of almost comedic generals that are just sending countless infantry into a sort of pointless war. And a lot of it, I have to admit, is influenced by the BBC series Blackadder Goes Forth, which
I was wondering
ridicules.
about that.
It's massively influenced by Blackadder. I used to find that out incredibly funny, and I also quite like the idea because I'm British and I'm very British, of having a game where I can just kind of, to some extent, sort of mock that sort of 1900s to 1940s British patriotism and optimism that the war would always be over by Christmas. And I quite like the idea that you could have a war that would go on for generations, but the British aristocracy would still be convinced that it would all be over by Christmas.
Always the
And that
stiff
amuses
upper lip,
absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely. I like the idea of just taking that and like propelling it forward to, having lasers and mechs and all that, but you still have patriotic slogans and dig for victory and all that kind of thing.
Now, have you had any feedback yet where anyone is suggesting or outright accusing you of writing an anti-war?
No, not at work. Gamers, it's a war game. What is there to say?
Right.
But I have a strange relationship with that. I mean, I love war movies. I would sit and watch. There's a documentary on TV here a few nights ago about the T-34 tank that I thought, yes, this is great. And but I read a lot of military history, and war is absolutely horrific, especially World War II. It's absolutely unbelievable. But at the same time, you have that sort of boyhood attraction to sort of heroism and conflict
Right.
and so on. So I kind of just switch off the part of my brain that says all these people are getting blown to bits, and it's just it's toy soldiers, really, isn't it?
Very true. So tell me a little bit about voicing the characters this time, because Gratuitous Space Battles really didn't have you had the communication logs up in the top corner, but now you can actually get close to the action and listen to the screams if you want. So tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was very last minute, actually. I for the first time I had someone working on sounds that I normally I buy stock sounds and I make some sounds and I do it all myself. But and I kind of don't like voices in games generally. I tend to find them quite irritating, but the sound guy said, look, I can get someone to do some German accents and voices and British accents. And I thought, well, maybe. And I sort of experimented with it, and I thought it worked really well. So yeah, it's gone in. It's the first time I've ever done that. And I think it was okay because there's a definite setting for this game. You know, it's mostly the British versus the Germans in their sort of endless European war, which I think is okay. But the moment you put it in a sci-fi game, suddenly you kind of have to pick an accent. And it becomes a little bit kind of Chekhov in Star Trek, where you focus on the accent and think, is this really in the future? You know, it kind of dates it a little bit. But with this game, I thought I could get away with it.
Well, especially because of the parody type nature of what you're presenting anyway, you know, the comedy version of World War. So how, yeah, the yucca minute version of World War One, you know.
Yeah.
So tell me about, like I said, humor has been a major part of your games anyway in that. So talk a little bit about that. Obviously, you said Blackadder was an influence, but what else influences your writing in terms of your mission briefings and so on and so forth?
I don't ever take anything in video games that seriously.
Right.
Because I'm kind of amused by the enforced seriousness that you get in some of these games. There's an excellent RTS game called Men of War.
Yes.
Which is, that's a great game, you know. And when I look at the engine that they built for that, I think that's some incredible work you put into that. But, and they've got voice acting in it. But the voice acting is so deadpan and serious. And you can tell, especially because I've worked in big game studios, that, you know, this is just a few geeks sat, you know, in an office going, we must kill the enemy. And it doesn't sound right. It just sounds bad. And I think you can get away with that if you kind of like roll with a general sort of sense of humor about the whole thing. Because ultimately, you know, it's a bunch of people sat there with keyboards and mice effectively playing with toy soldiers. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. And I, you know, I'm a hardcore gamer and I love it. But it's, you know, it's not, you know, Dostoevsky or anything, is it? It's a kind of like tower defense game with walking tanks with laser guns. So mock seriousness would just be silly. I think I couldn't pull it off.
So tell me about the idea of using the walking tank. How much fun did you have designing the mechs and the various tanks and so on?
Well, the mechs are a technical disaster. They're so difficult.
Really?
To do. Yeah, because there's no 3D models, which is why the game runs really fast, even on like a lot of very old laptops and everything. And you can have a lot going on. You can have a very sort of frantic battle, and you don't really need a particularly good video card or chip or anything, because effectively it's kind of all just sprites, and there's a lot of sprites and a lot of cleverness goes into making them go quick, but there's no actual 3D models being loaded at runtime in the game. So it's pretty old school. There's just a very elaborate walking animation for the mechs that's kind of huge, which caused a lot of problems. Everything is modeled in 3D and then it's kind of rendered into 2D for the game. So yeah, technically they were quite hard. But the guy that designed and did the 3D models for the mechs was the artist on Mech Commander 2.
Oh wow.
So he's worked with me before. He did the spaceships in Gratuitous Space.
That's true. That's right. Yes.
So I sort of said to him, I'm doing a new game, tanks and everything, and mechs, and obviously he loved it. He was like, excellent. You don't need to say another word. You know, I've got all my mech ideas in my head, and you know, I didn't have to suggest anything to him. It was just like, you know, he loved designing all that stuff, and I'm really happy with it all.
Well, just like in Gratuitous Space Battles, the units are very, very easily distinguishable. So tell me a little bit about that. How difficult is it to come up with – you want cool designs and things that look the most effective and that look powerful. But you also want things, as I've said, that a player can say, okay, that's my medium, that's my heavy, and they can do it easily and quickly. So tell me about – are there compromises that have to be made when designing something like that, or how does that work?
Well, generally you find that you have to just make things more extreme, because it has to be that kind of instant. It often really works from a silhouette. You know, you could look at a silhouette of any of this stuff in the game, and you'd know, you know, whether it was meant to be big, small, or sort of medium or whatever, regardless of the size of it, because it just has that kind of look to it. And you know, my artist was pretty damn good at that anyway, so they don't really need that much encouragement. And it's basically a matter of just like making the heavy stuff really heavy looking, much more so than it would be in real life, especially because you've only got one perspective on everything. You're only looking top down.
Right.
But yeah, quite a bit of effort goes into sort of making sure that everything is very recognizable from a distance.
And what about setting up the pacing? I mean, again, gratuitous space battles was a little bit easier that way because you just put in the ships and then what happened happened. But here you had to come up with the proper pace so that a player is frantically clicking and adding things and keeping an eye on the battlefield and knowing when to replace units and when to call up reinforcements. But you don't want it so over the top in terms of pacing that people get frustrated and walk away from it. So how do you go about fine-tuning that? How did you decide where that line is?
I mean, ultimately, the kind of harsh truth of it is that you just have to play the game an endless amount
Right.
and keep tweaking it. But one of the things that makes it easier is that all of the maps are the same size. Which initially, when I'd started working on the game, it was flexible, and I could have tiny maps, and I could have huge maps. But I actually found that the really big maps were just annoying, because you couldn't keep an eye on everything. And what you ended up doing, and I'm very aware of this as a designer, is you ended up playing the game by staring at the mini map, which I used to do with SimCity 4. I always remember it was amazing well, not proper 3D engine. But I used to play the game just looking at all of the sort of bar charts at the bottom and
Right.
ignoring the game. And as a designer, you really don't want that because you put all this effort into, you know, the main screen. So, you know, the minimap's there and you do need it in this game. But I think the maps are just about the right size. If they were bigger, it would get out of control. And if they were smaller, it would seem very restrictive. And there is one mission, I think it's the fifth one, the first desert one, that feels massive, and there's a hell of a lot going on, but it's actually no bigger than, in terms of the map, than the first tutorial. It's just that there's a lot more in it, and that made it a lot easier to balance all the kind of time and pacing and difficulty that there was this fixed area.
Well, that kind of brings up a story I'd heard about Gearbox. They had a playtesting group for Borderlands, and people said that they didn't feel the character was moving fast enough. So the normal developer reaction probably would have been speed up the character, and their idea was add more scenery. So it sounds like the same kind of thing. If you plan out the map well enough, that it seems like it's this grand epic battle, and really, like you said, it's the same size map.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite surprising. I mean, even as I say that to you, I mean, obviously, I'm really familiar with all of the different maps in the game, and it does surprise me because when I play that first map, it's like, ah, oh, this is so easy. You know, this is the tutorial thing. There's only one route. When I play the desert map, it's like, ah, you know, what's going on? No, they're over here. No, they're over there. And yeah, it is just a matter of what you can kind of like all pack into that area.
So what advice do you have for players who are not, again, who have not tried gratuitous tank battles yet, but want to get into it, but they feel a little bit overwhelmed by the amount of choice they have, and just it's so completely different.
Well, the thing is, it's designed to be one of these games that you can pick up and you can play in 5 minutes and you can have fun. But also, if you want to get really into it, you can play hundreds of hours of it. So, if you think, oh wow, it sounds really complicated, you know, it doesn't matter because you can just buy the game and play the game as a tower defense game. You could ignore all of the rest of it. You know, you can still go through and unlock all this stuff. You can just play as defense. You can just play against those scripted battles if you want. But when you do that, you'll probably find yourself thinking, you know, what is it actually like against adaptive AI and or on this different difficulty level or whatever? And I don't think anyone will just play through it as a normal tower defense game, because the minute you've got the option to suddenly swap around and play it as attacker, or, you know, to play against yourself or edit the map. I mean, that is one of the key things in this game. That I play a lot of Company of Heroes with a friend.
Okay.
And I love that game. But there's kind of not enough really good maps that kind of everybody has. And sometimes you think, wouldn't it be cool if we just edited just this tiny bit of the map here? And to do that is complicated. You need to load up a world editor, and it's hassle. Whereas in GTB, you can just like change one little path square, add one little you know, deployment spot if you like, and then go click click, and then you're playing that map again that you've edited, and you can trivially send it to a friend of yours that plays the game, and that was really crucial, because what that suddenly means is I've put a lot of effort into putting together some really good maps, but I'm sure there's people out there that think, no, that map's not good because you shouldn't have put that there, and they can just edit it and improve it over time. I really look forward to like seeing how maps evolve when people really get used to using the editor.
I'm looking forward to seeing some of those as well, because there are some incredibly talented map designers out there.
Yeah, definitely.
So talk to me a little bit. Customization has always been, and we just hit on a little bit, but how difficult is that to implement, not even just in terms of maps, but allowing a player to have complete control over the types of units? How much work does that take for you to be able to implement? I can create whatever type of unit I want, give them whatever armaments I want, and then send them out. How difficult is that as a designer to allow people to do that in such a way that it still says fun without creating an I win button and so on and so forth?
Yeah. It's, well, there's a lot of spreadsheets involved, you know, to check that that doesn't happen. And these days, games do quite a lot of cunning stuff. For example, all of the damage done, I'm not sure if this is going to continue past the beta or not, but when you upload anything from the game, so say you're uploading your map for someone else to play, or you're unlocking certain units and that wants to update your online profile, all of that's optional. You don't even need to be online. But if you do that, then a lot of the metrics about the game also get uploaded anonymously. So I can tell what is the most effective weapon in the game in terms of doing damage, and I can tell what is the least effective weapon, and I'm occasionally tweaking those to make sure that there isn't a sort of killer weapon. And that tends to happen quite a lot now. So in an online game, they will have a massive statistics about, you know, what particular perk is being used by the top players and what weapon is being used by the top players and all the rest of it. And that makes it a lot easier, because if you don't have that, then you just have to have a lot of spreadsheets and a lot of experience of playing the game, and a lot of asking players what they think as well.
Right. So you, as you just said, you're still in beta. So are there features that you're waiting to implement that you're planning on springing on the players, or?
Yeah. Well, the reason I'm kind of tired and stressed today is for a while. Well, there's two features that. For a while, I've been thinking there should be airstrikes in the game as defender, in the same way that Defense Grid has this with like a laser that can come down.
Right.
And I've had a lot of ideas of kind of interesting ways to do that in the game. So that's been on my list of things to do, and I've been working on it all day. And it's one of those things that's actually quite simple from a technical aspect to code, but the user interface for it and getting everything to work fast and reliably and bug-free and everything just takes forever. But that's definitely going in, because I'm over the point where there's no going back now. I've put that much effort in that, as long as it's fun, obviously, you know, that's going to make it in. And the other thing that I keep thinking about a lot, and I'm not sure whether it would work or not, is a bit of a kind of realism thing. I like the idea that there's an area behind big tanks where infantry are safe, because obviously historically, you know, you'd have a big slow Churchill tank, and then you'd have a bunch of British infantry behind it hugging the back of it,
right,
to use it as a big shield effectively. And I do quite like the idea of just giving a slight kind of armor boost to all of the infantry behind a big vehicle like that. But I'm not sure if I can make it sort of work and obviously make sense and be kind of obviously fair and reasonable and balance it. So I don't know whether that will go in or not, but I'm definitely going to try it.
I wonder if something like an overlapping shields almost, you know, if the tanks had a
Yeah.
shield and then each individual troop had a little, you know, a little hand shield, then you could just overlap it that way and it would be.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of possibilities. The trouble is when you're the coder as well as the designer and the guy running the business, there's nobody to stop you. There's
Right.
nobody to say, look, no, you've got to stop adding stuff. And obviously there isn't, because I've designed this hugely stupidly featured game that's got everything in, and that's because there's no one to say, you know, look. People don't expect there to be that in the game. You don't have to put that in, which is what normally happens at kind of big studios. There's someone there keeping an eye on the budget, saying, you know, you can't do that.
So you've got the voice in your head saying, but I wanna.
Yeah,
Right.
exactly. And even after the game ships, you know, I'm sure I'm going to keep adding stuff. There were 56 updates to Gratuitous Space Battles, and a huge chunk of them came long after it was on sale,
Right.
just because I loved working on it. So I'm sure the same, as long as I can afford to. So, you know, presuming that some people buy the game, you know, I'm sure I'll end up doing exactly the same thing with this one.
Well, it sounds great. Why don't you give people an idea of where they can find the game? I'll let you do your own plug for this, where they can find it,
Okay.
how much they can expect to pay, and when do we think that it'll go live out of beta?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, you pre-order it, but basically you buy
Right.
it because you know, you get an installer straight away to play the latest version of it. At the moment, you can only do that on my website, which, predictably enough, is gratuitous space oh gratuitous
Oh.
tank battles.com. I'm so used to saying gratuitous space battles.
it was a major part of your life.
It took over my life for like 2.5 years. Yeah. So yeah, at the moment you can only get it from gratuitoustankbattles.com. It's $22.95, but if you know someone else that wants it, you can, when you buy it, get a second copy at half price. So, you know, you can get it cheaper. It will be on Steam. I presume it will be on a number of other places, like you know, Direct Drive and stuff like that.
Right.
But if you pre-order the game from my site, then when it's on Steam, all of those people will get given a Steam key, you know, because I know a lot of people kind of expect that and want that. But the only place at the moment to get it is from my site, and there isn't a set date for it yet. It's probably going to be about another month. Maybe slightly more, maybe slightly less. That kind of depends on a lot of boring businessy stuff. But it's an arbitrary point then, because, you know, I'll continue adding stuff to the game
Of
anyway.
course.
So it's perfectly playable and up and running now. So there's no reason not to buy now.
I agree. It's already fast and frantic. I have a lot of difficulty with it, but I've never been good at this type of game. But
Well, play on easy. You can change the difficulty.
that's what I plan to do. And my review should be coming up in a day or so. So,
Excellent.
Cliff Harris, thank you so much for being back on the program. We really appreciate it. And hopefully we can have you back on again.
Yeah, definitely. It's great fun.